This week on Art in the Air, feature speaker and author Patty DeNucci, whose new book, More Than Just Talk, explores improving your relationships through conversations. Next, we have artist and art advocate Aben Hanna-Smith discussing his recent Lebesnik exhibit and position at South Shore Arts. Our spotlight is on LaPorte County Symphony's March 12th concert featuring pictures at an exhibition.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM and WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming at WVLP.org, and every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available on our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our shows are available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for more information about upcoming shows and interviews. I would like to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight. Of course, we have Your Majesty Tim King, who's the... we like to have some royalty on our spotlights, and we brought him on. He's going to talk about what's coming up for the LaPorte County Symphony. They've had some great concerts. They just finished the side-by-side not too long ago, and now we're moving on to another concert. Tim, welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Aloha. Hi, Tim.
Aloha.
So you've got a March 12th concert, and it's not at your normal venue either, as well as your side-by-side concert, which you had at LaPorte. So tell us a little bit about what's coming up on March 12th.
Well, this one is going to be in Michigan City. It's going to be at the Holdcraft Performing Arts Center, and it's going to be on a Sunday. So this is a little diversion from what we normally have. This is a Sunday afternoon concert at 3 p.m. on Sunday, March the 12th at the Holdcraft Performing Arts Center. And some people know that as the old Elston High School or Junior High. So I've been told. But anyway, it's the Holdcraft Performing Arts Center there off of Franklin. And Dr. Carolyn Watson has put together a really, really nice program for that. It's mostly classical nature. We're going to start off with Alexander Bordin's On the Steppes of Central Asia. It's about a 7-minute little tone poem that was performed in the first season of the orchestra. Carolyn has programmed one or two pieces on every concert that we have, pieces that were performed in the first year of our orchestra, sort of commemorate that. So that will open the concert. And then she's doing a piece that probably no one has heard of from around here. It's by an Australian composer named Elena Katz Chernin, and it's called Dance of the Paper Umbrellas.
Wow.
It's a sweet, sweet piece. It's only about 5 minutes long, and it almost sounds like a background to a movie or something. If you were, you could almost visualize the paper umbrellas in this piece. She's got a really beautiful way of visualizing her pieces. So that's going to be the second piece on the program, orchestra only. And then we're welcoming Michael Chertok. Michael is a wonderful pianist that I've worked with several times in the past. He's been the chair of the piano department at Cincinnati Conservatory of Music for many, many years, since 2005. But he's also in demand as a soloist all across the country and in Europe. Philadelphia, Toronto, New York, St. Louis, Cincinnati. So He's going to be performing Prokofiev's Piano Concerto No. 1, which is about a 17-minute piece. It's one of his staples. Another staple that Mike does is Rhapsody in Blue. He's really well known for doing Rhapsody in Blue. But Prokofiev is one of his pieces. And he's one of these pianists. Number one, he's a super nice guy. And number two, he's one of those rare individuals that can play Prokofiev during the day and then play Melancholy Baby in any key that you want in a nightclub at night. I mean, he is just... He's not only can he read music on sight, but his ear is amazing on top of that. So with all this combination, I just can't wait for people here to hear him and experience him, because he's just a joy. And you can just tell the joy that comes out of the piano when he plays. He's going to be doing a small reception for us the night before. And I have specifically asked him to play some pieces that are not classical, so our donors can get a chance to see just how vast his talent is. So that's the first half of the program. And then the second half of the program will be Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition, which originally was a piano composition, and then the composer Maurice Ravel orchestrated that to a really beautiful, bombastic piece of music. And so what's normally done on that piece is they show photos from the Russian Museum that Mussorgsky is featuring. But instead of doing that this time, we're going to show photos from the orchestra's 50 years. Oh. So we're going to start in 1974, and we're going to show so many photos per movement so the audience can kind of see the progression of the orchestra along with the progression of the piece. And that's what's going to be happening on Sunday, March the 12th.
What a great program that is. And I know I was looking back at your guest artist on Michael Chertoff. You can see him at michaelchertoff.com. What a great piece. Yeah, the Pictures Exhibition, that's always fun. And what a great idea you're celebrating your history almost all the season and everything. So it's a great way to go.
It is. And we like performing in Michigan City. We like the hall. I like the hall because it's real friendly to the patron. There's no steps. It's comfortable. The acoustics are good. There's no steps. I mean, you go in the front door, there's no steps. You go into the hall, there's no steps. There's no balcony. It's about a 750 seat auditorium, and it's all one level. Every seat is pretty good view of the stage, certainly of the piano out front. And I just think there's a lot of nice variety, but I'm especially happy to have Michael here, and I just want more people to experience this great musician that's going to be joining us.
Well, we're going to have you back on the show to talk about this, but maybe give us a preview of what's coming next, which is you've got some exciting things coming down the tube here.
We do. Well, we have Hoosier Star auditions on March the 18th and 19th. And so we're putting the word out there. We want people to try out for Hoosier Star. They just go to HoosierStar.com. Very simple. The audition applications are there, and it doesn't hurt anybody to just try out. Who knows? Maybe you might be a finalist with us in September. And then we're going to end the season with the Purdue Varsity Glee Club and the Texas Tenors. So that's going to be pretty much of a blowout concert on that one back at the Civic, April the 22nd. You can only get tickets online because we're selling those individual seats. We're not doing a general admission in the balcony on that one. So Texas Tenors and Purdue Varsity Glee Club, and I know you're probably a fan of one or the other, so it doesn't make any difference, but come out and join us as we put a really good close on our 50th.
Well, that sounds great. You always program such a great program, and Carolyn does a great job there. I mean, what a find for the orchestra to have her on board.
I know. She brings all these wonderful Australian talent that we wouldn't have necessarily been exposed to. It's excellent.
True.
Tell us real quick, what's coming up with the Pictures Exhibition concert? Dates, times, location?
LCSO, Sunday, March the 12th, 3 p.m. at the Holcraft Performing Arts Center. You can get tickets on our website at lcso.net or Roxy Music in LaPorte, or you can probably get tickets on the day of the concert at the Holcraft. We open the doors at 2:00.
Sounds great. That's Tim King, the royalty from LaPorte County Symphony. Thank you for coming on Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the full 1 hour Art on the Air program on Lakeshore Public Radio is brought to you by Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Patty DiNucci to Art on the Air.
Patty is the author of the award-winning success guide, The Intentional Networker, Attracting Powerful Relationships, Referrals, and Results in Business, and has just released her new book, More Than Talk, The Essential Guide for Anyone Who Wants to Enjoy Better Conversation. Patty believes it's not how many people you know or talk to, it's the quality of your conversations and connections. Thank you, Patty, for joining Larry and I on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome.
Hello. Oh, thanks to both of you.
And it's great to see you again.
And you.
On our show of conversation.
Yes. You know, because this is a conversation show. Patty was part of the Lakeshore Professional Women's Conference the last time we had it. And so I met her there. And I think you gave me your previous book there at that time. So.
Yeah. And I think I've actually spoken at that conference twice. So.
Right.
That was a repeat. It was very nice to go back and know people.
Well, we'd like to have you back. But unfortunately, I don't think we're going to be doing that anymore. The Purdue University Northwest picked it up. Well, anyway, how we want to start off, like we always do, is we want our audience to kind of get to know you and find out your origin story. I always like to say, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So, Patty, tell us about yourself.
Well, I grew up in a small iron mining town in northern Minnesota, a little town called Chisholm. It's the town they feature in the movie Field of Dreams when they go to find Moonlight Graham, who has become a doctor. And he was really a doctor. He gave my older sisters their polio shots. So that's a little piece of Hollywood trivia. That's my little connection to Kevin Costner. I'm just going to go with that. I was the last of the litter. I was the fourth daughter in a family of four girls. My dad was the local Chevrolet dealer, and he and his dad kept their business going. I like to say, especially now, one conversation at a time is how they built it and how they kept it running in a little town of people from all over the world. And I remember always spending time with a very creative friend of mine, my friend Gina Patami, who lived down the street. She and I were always doing creative projects, putting on a show, putting on a fake wedding, drawing things, putting on plays. We just had a wonderful, creative, feral childhood, you know, where mom kicks you out of the house and tells you to stay there until lunch and then kicks you out of the house again. You know, we just got kicked out of the house all the time. Even, you know, if it was 20 below, well, okay, maybe we can go play in the basement. But I had a wonderful childhood filled with wonderful teachers who were so inspiring and helpful and encouraging for us to develop our gifts. And I know my 10th grade English teacher read one of my first essays and said, you know, you need to become a writer. And then my high school art teacher said, you need to become an artist. So I was, my band director, I played the oboe in the concert band, and nobody said anything about going on to play the oboe. So right. I let that go.
Playing the oboe is almost like a religion in and of itself, along with the French horn players.
Oh my God, our dog used to howl when I practiced. It was
So what was it like around the dinner table? Was there a lot of conversation? Was it a very interactive family experience?
Well, I was the youngest, so I hardly got a word in edgewise, and that still happens when my sisters and I get together, which is hard for some people to believe because I tend to be a little chatty. But yeah, we had a very calm, nurturing family, very traditional roles. I feel like June and Ward Cleaver were my parents, and some people won't even know who that is or who those people are because they're not old enough. But I had a very wholesome family. You know, my dad fought in World War II, and, you know, just I was so blessed. And here's the other thing. Both my mom and dad were really good social role models. My dad was very outgoing and gregarious and liked to just he spent a lot of time, you know, just walking up and down Main Street, checking in on other businesses and everybody. And my mom was more of an introvert. She was more selective with her friends. She went to bridge club. She had a study club she went to. But to this day, all my friends, my high school friends, remember both my parents very fondly, and my mother especially, because she just was always so welcoming and gracious, you know, even to my sketchy boyfriends and, you know, who knows who I dragged home and brought to the dinner table. No, I was just, you know, I got to say, I hope I was nearly the parent that, you know, my parents were to me. I was very blessed that way.
So after you growing up there, obviously you go through high school and you talked a little bit about that, but then you move on to college. So what was that experience like?
I went to the University of Wisconsin-Stout in Menominee. I don't know if you've even heard of it. When in doubt, go to Stout, Harvard of the Midwest.
Yeah.
And I majored in clothing, textiles, and design and minored in art. And I picked that major because I was interested in clothing and fashion and all that. But that major gave us a lot of flexibility to have modules in different areas of the business, like marketing, communication, journalism, business. And so I got a very well-rounded education, had a great time. I would do it all again. It was a wonderful little town. Farther south in Chisholm, so the winters were ever so slightly warmer. But yeah, I just got a taste of all kinds of things when I went off to college. And then
so were
I
you
followed...
doing art during that time?
Did I was. Think... I minored in art, so I, you know, had fashion illustration, you know, drawing, design, painting, sculpture, art history.
I know you had mentioned the fashion. I didn't know if it included other.
And then the fashion, you know, I learned about the fashion industry, but I also, you know, learned about Peter Drucker and some of the icons in business. I don't know. I don't know how you could have designed a better major for me. It was perfect. I can't think of, I even liked the economics class. It was really interesting. And I only had to take one chemistry class, so that was good.
Well, there you go. So you go through college and you graduate and you have an art and textile. So what's the next step?
Well, initially my plan was going to be to go out to New York. And then I, you know, ended up in a relationship, got engaged, and my fiance got a job in Texas, in Austin. And so I came down here to check it out. I loved the city. I loved the climate, you know, no long winters. And I found a job in a marketing department of a scientific instrumentation company. I mean, almost everything down here is high tech. If it's not music, it's high tech. And so they always say people end up in the high tech industry here, whether you like it or not. So I worked in marketing there for a year and a half. And then I got hired at an advertising and PR agency run by a woman, an amazing woman, who was just starting up this agency that was going to serve all the new fledgling high-tech companies. And I worked there for almost 7 years, had an absolute blast with her, learned about PR and advertising, worked with some really talented designers and illustrators, really cool people, trying to explain complicated technology, you know, in ways that people can understand. And so I got to the copywriting piece of it too. But I feel like in my career, I've always, and in my life, I've always had numerous interests and was able to find jobs that never were boring, allowed me to flex a lot of different talents and intellectual muscles.
So with that, and of course, raising a family in Texas, you're moving on. How did you get into start doing speaking and then the type of thing you are doing now? Maybe explain what you're doing now, like out there.
Well, and it's interesting because if you had told me that, you know, in your mid to later years, you'll be a professional speaker, I would have said, oh, you're kidding me. Because I didn't even take speech in high school. And the reason was, this is just my opinion, of course, our speech and drama teacher reminded me of Alan Rickman as Severus Snape in the Harry Potter movies. He was terrifying. I don't know why I ended up, why did I go for the oboe? I mean, the oboe seemed easier. You know, I had one more elective I could take, and so I ended up playing the oboe. But anyway, I finally took speech my last semester in college. That's it. But here's how it happened. I started a freelance marketing communications consulting practice in 1989, which is going to date me. And I was doing really well attracting clients, and I'm a natural gregarious person. And so I was out networking and, you know, word of mouth and all that. And people kept asking me to come speak about it. And I was getting so many invitations to do that and to go to coffee with people so they could ask me the same questions that I thought, you know, a book would just be a good way to capture all that wisdom and, you know, put it in a package that I could sell. So I created the Intentional Networker. And then, of course, naturally, it's like being a musician. If you're going to record an album, you have to go on tour. So I started speaking and got involved in launching a new chapter of the National Speakers Association here in Austin. So I just dove right in. I don't know. I just, you know, grow wings on the way down. That's the way I look at it. It was a fun empty nest challenge for me.
That's true. So yeah. And you're still in Austin right now, so you've stayed there.
Yeah, I am.
But you go out and do lots of speaking engagements all over. I mean, that's the bread and butter.
I do. I have been all over I don't travel the world. I'm not going to say I'm a world, world traveling speaker. I do like traveling internationally, but I haven't done it professionally. But I mean, I've been all over. I've spoken for, companies like Microsoft and MGM Resorts and Rodan and Fields, the skincare company, and HEB here, which is our big grocery store chain here, their women's leadership group. And the leadership groups and the women's groups are my favorite by far.
Right.
And I think it's because people want to be in the room. They want to be there. They want to learn. And it's just wonderful to be able to help them.
So let's look about, you've got a new book out, and let's talk a little bit about that. I've had a chance, unfortunately, I didn't read it cover to cover yet, but I will, because I have your other book. Yeah, but I've gone through that, and let's talk a little bit about that. And it's really about the art of conversation. And
it is.
And not just talking, but listening. So tell us a little bit about the structure of the book.
Well, The Intentional Networker came out in 2011, and that book has done really well. It's taken me on a journey I never could have imagined. And I do, and people still tell me, oh, I just bought your book. I can't wait to read it. And so More Than Just Talk is what I call the prequel to The Intentional Networker, because I kept getting questions about, I understand to be more mindful about my networking and more selective and all those things. But what about just the conversation, striking up a conversation, managing a conversation, walking away from a conversation, doing better, feeling more confident and authentic in a conversation. So around 2014, I started working on this book and thinking, oh, how hard can this be? And I dove into the research of why we need conversations and what's stopping us. And I was just pleasantly, I guess, fascinated with all the information out there. And so I spent it's been about 8 or 9 years working on this book. And I had a vision that I wanted it to be somewhat of a workbook. I wanted it to allow some reflection time or be used as a discussion piece. Any of those reflection exercises in the book can be used as a discussion.
I know. I love that you say just pick a day and open the page and see what it has to offer you.
Yeah. And so in my the introduction, the part where I'm talking about why I wrote the book, I tell people you don't have to read this cover to cover unless you want to. And you can pick the chapter or the section that speaks to you. And, there's a section on listening. There's a section on why this is important and a couple of sections on, how to succeed and how to dive in there and use some new tactics and strategies to improve your conversations. And then, of course, one of my favorite chapters, dealing with the drainers and the downers in your life, which I think we can all say, especially now, we have plenty of those. It seems like being negative is becoming a sport, a competitive sport. I tried to answer all the questions that I was getting, and it ended up being a pretty substantial project. And the woman who helped me edit it, Susan Priddy, she is a dear friend of 30 some odd years. We've both been in the marketing communications world, and she's narrowed her writing practice into editing books. So we had a blast. We just had such a good time. And I think that makes all the difference when you're working with people that you love.
Yeah, it sure does. And you're right. I like I said, I was trying to get through the whole book, but it's one of those books you pick up and then you want to sit down and think about it. It's not one of those things that you're, this is interesting. And I did love the section about the D&Ds, as you call it.
D&Ds.
And I also liked how you use that. Like you also have utilizing your 4 P's and consider the 4 C's. And maybe tell us a little bit about those.
Well, it's interesting. The 4 P's, I'm actually building a keynote about that one. And the 4 P's, I'll just, I'll try to recite them. I have a cheat sheet here with my table of contents, but I'll try to recite them because, man, my brain is really full right now. First of all, positive, purposeful, yet also being a possibilitarian, which I don't know if that's a real word, but from now on it is.
It is.
Having a purpose, kind of going into any social situation or networking situation with, some idea of what you want to accomplish or experience, but also just open up to learning something new. And the example I often give is, you're going to a family reunion or Thanksgiving dinner or Easter or whatever, and you're going to see Aunt Matilda, and she's going to tell you about her gallbladder surgery yet again. And why don't you do some of the strategies in the book to shift her out of that dreary story and ask her something that you would love to know? Like, how did you meet Uncle Bob? When did you fall in love? When was your first kiss? When did you know he was the one? I mean, get her out of the gallbladder mania. And that's what I want to do. I want to fix these conversations. And then the last one is being proactive and remembering that your social life and the quality of your conversations is your responsibility. It's not about other people entertaining you and introducing you around, although that's very nice when people do that. But why not be that person
right.
who sets the stage for great conversations and gets you out of the mud when things go down a dark path?
Early in your book, you talk about getting those happy brain chemicals working as far as getting yourself. I guess one of the things I kind of got from it in general, and it's not even paraphrasing, is you need to like yourself before you start liking and reaching out to other people. And there's, yeah. you know, that sometimes is a challenge for some people. But mm-hmm. I think that's important that they do that.
It is. And, you know, maybe you need to spend a year working on yourself and, you know, getting that counseling that you need or exploring what is it that's keeping you in an angry place or a fearful place or, I don't know, there's so many places we could be.
I know. It's really yeah. nice because it reinforces that. And I think a quote from the book was, say hello to others and you will have a happier day. And it's so true. You smile and you just, I mean, just the act of smiling is wonderful. But when you smile yeah. and connect with someone else, and actually, would we have friendships without conversation? I mean,
would we have anything good in our lives without conversation? I mean, everything mm-hmm. great in my life resulted from a conversation with somebody, you know, and it's so funny. My boyfriend and I, when we go out to eat, we'll often sit at the bar at a restaurant first because we forget to make reservations. And, you know, so there's that. But we always meet really interesting people. And of course, there's always the bartenders to talk to. And I call it my research. I'm always talking to the wait staff about, you know, how many people in this restaurant tend to be friendly versus the ones that are, you know, neutral or the ones that are actually rude to you. And it gives me a little bit of a beat on what's happening in the world. And sadly, people aren't very friendly. I don't think people are meaning to go out into the world and be awful. I think we just forget how delightful it is to just say hi to the dry cleaning lady, ask her how she's doing, ask her about her grandchild.
Sure.
Give her a minute to talk because she's bored and you'll make a friend.
Can I bring up a situation then? Like a situational
sure.
thing. Okay. So you're the person walking into the pre-presentation of a professional presentation. And so you walk into the room and everybody, and you don't recognize anybody except the host. And the host chooses not to acknowledge you, let's say, and everybody mm-hmm. has already grouped into talking groups. So what, and there is no single person there just waiting for you to go up and say hello to. So what would you do?
Oh my gosh. And this is a presentation situation? Boy, you picked
yes.
a tough one. I think I'd just sit down at a table. I think I'd just pull up to a group. I mean, again, it's being proactive. And here's the other thing, being positive, assuming that no one's going to mind. You know, here's the thing. We need to assume positive rapport and realize that we have every right to be in a social situation as anybody else, unless you're crashing a wedding, then that's
no.
You
know. And so I guess my point is like, so you've got these groups, they're talking, you walk by them, you know, and you sort of insert yourself. But, you know, do you have like an entry opening? Like,
well, for starters, I always look for the fun people. And sometimes I will walk in and especially if people are laughing, I'll say, you know, I missed the punchline. Could you please repeat it? Because I'm looking for the fun group here. And that has worked. It works all the time. And honestly, I want to be with the fun people.
Right.
I don't want to be with the boring people.
That's for sure. Well, you know, and what going back to the point we were talking about before is I find a smile works really well. But also you talk about working with wait staff or other people is calling them by name really helps a lot. If it can be the checkout person or something like that, and just thanking them, you know, thank you for today. You know, thanks for and that seems to go a long way to be proactive with people and
yeah.
they just open
we
up.
Have
like
to stop
that.
Being so anonymous with each other.
I know.
You know, if you're within 5 or 10 feet of somebody, acknowledge them, smile, say good morning. What, you know, most people aren't scary. Most people aren't, you know, criminals.
The greeters at the grocery stores, they brighten your day generally.
Totally.
When I mean like they say hello and it's like, you know, they make they make the time to do that.
Yeah, it makes a difference. Sets the mood.
It does.
So we've asked some of our people about this, and probably this is during while you're writing the book. How did COVID impact you? Obviously, you couldn't go out and speaking engagements much and maybe got to work on your book more. But, you know, some people became very productive and some people kind of withdrew themselves. So how did Patty get affected by that?
Patty was going to take 2020 off anyway to finish the book. So I thought that was, you know, if we're going to have a pandemic, good timing on my, you know, on the part of everybody. I think it brought home how important this work was because, you know, sure, I picked up the phone almost every morning when I was out walking and just called people, some of my favorite friends, I would call them. And of course, I was working on this book. So I, you know, was having interactions with my editor and, you know, my boyfriend lives here and we still kind of got out, mostly outside, because we live in a nice climate, but it really brought home the pandemic, the political climate of the world, and just the fact that we were already, the whole country was in a state of social anonymity even before all those things. So this just, I don't know, I think the timing of the book couldn't be better. I'm really happy that it's ready and it's out there now.
Are you looking for, you know, you just got this book out there. Is there a book number three somewhere down the road?
Another prequel?
there's always a project. Let's just say there's always a project. But I will probably let this one have its moment in the sun. And, you know, I'm going to be out there speaking more. I have mostly speaking engagements around Austin and Texas at the moment, although I think I may have one, I don't know, Kansas City. I might have one. I'm just ramping up. But I'm doing a lot of podcasts, which are really fun.
Well, and even like being on our little radio show here, and we appreciate that. Well, we have only about 1 minute left, and we want to give you a chance to tell how people can find you online, if you've got speaking engagements coming up in March or further on this. Just tell us about
that. A site of your artwork, by any chance?
Oh, yes.
Not yet, but that's coming. Well, if people can go to my website, intentionalnetworker.com. Or PattyDiNucci.com, and hopefully that will be spelled somewhere out there. And there's a pop-up that comes up, and if you fill that out, you have access to 4 different freebies, including a free chapter from More Than Just Talk, a free chapter from The Intentional Networker, the appendix from More Than Just Talk, which sounds really boring, but it's a list of conversation starting questions grouped by category according to what kind of setting you're in. And people are jumping all over that because honestly, if you want to talk about the art of conversation, the art of asking good questions is a great place to begin. You know, that can change a conversation instantly. So people can email me at pattydinucci@gmail.com. I love answering questions about conversation and connecting and networking. And if you need a speaker for your event, give me a call. I'm my calendar is pretty open.
Yeah, and I can vouch for it. She's a great speaker and great personality, and lovely. Got her to meet her through Lakeshore, a professional women's conference, was I involved with. That's Patty Nucci. She's an author, speaker, facilitator, consultant. Her new book is More Than Just Talk, Live, Work, and Connect at a Higher Level. Patty, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your journey and your whole life story.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Larry and Esther.
And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art in the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Avon Hannah Smith to Art on the Air. Avon's artistic future came to the forefront in high school. His passion for the arts and advocacy fuels him to create work that brings an awareness to his audience, centered around the plight of African Americans, including those in impoverished communities. Avon is currently the administrative coordinator for South Shore Arts in Munster, Indiana. Thank you, Avon, for joining Larry and I on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you, Larry and Esther. It's amazing to be here.
We appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your art journey, but also your art advocacy journey. And so part of that is we want to know your origin story, you know, where you grew up, where you went to school, and everything in between all the way up to where you are now. So how I like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us about yourself, Avon.
I know, because I believe it must have started before high school, so.
Yes, it definitely did. I remember as early as 6 or 7 years old, just drawing and I always loved it. I didn't really understand why, like why I wanted to draw instead of like learn in school, right? I was just always drawing on notes. And so that really started to be my passion because I realized I love doing this more than everything else. And then in high school, I started to take AP sculpture classes. And that really went towards my college credit. And I took that to college where I actually got my BFA in painting at Kent State University. And I went to high school at Percy O. Julian in Chicago, Illinois.
Right.
So it was very interesting to see everyone's reaction to when I said I was going to Kent, Ohio. And I mean, it was amazing, though. My experience there was amazing. There was times where I felt I didn't fit in, right? But I feel like that comes with the creative nature at times, you know, of where how can I start to develop my art and where can it take me? And then when I graduated, I felt burnt out. I'm not gonna lie. I felt really burnt out. And after that, I started to discover my other passions. All the other subjects in elementary school that I overlooked, I was now starting to get more involved with, actually. So I went to transportation and logistics. I went into social media marketing. I went into cleaning and custodial work. I really just soaked up every single experience that I've had in my life. And now it's coming out in my artwork because now I get back to my passion. So. But now everything comes together. Like, I mean, I have my website. I have all these understandings about analytics that I can take with me into my business and commerce and even my advocacy for the arts. So
tell us, let's dial it back from college and let's talk about your origin story, like where you grew up and like early art influences, if you had any. And tell us about that, you know, prior to even high school and college.
From the family, you know, was your family artistic?
Well, yeah, my mom and dad, they used to draw. They're mainly like draftsmen. They didn't really paint or anything. A lot of graphite drawings, but it was for them as elementary school, a little bit of high school. And after that, they just stopped creating art. But I guess it was always in them because now I'm pursuing the career in arts. So I guess it was always there. They've always supported me too.
Very good.
So do you paint? Do you paint in acrylics or do mixed media? Are your works mixed media? It was kind of hard to tell on some of them.
All of my works are mixed media.
Okay.
And the acrylic is like a base, so that's like the staple in each piece. But now it is starting to go into oil pastel and chalk pastel, and I'm using acrylic medium to create those layers to seal all those mediums together, because as we all know, media, there's rules to it, right? You can't have acrylic on oil paint. Like if it's all oil paint, it can't be acrylic on top because the oil will dry a certain way and make the acrylic crumble. So I really avoid oil paints in my work. I would love to learn to mix those with my other materials too, like my found materials. But at this moment, that research has not been done. I've tried in the past and it has not created my best pieces.
So. Well, sometimes experimentation is the way to go. You recently had an exhibit at Lebesnik Art Center. So tell us a little bit about that. Unfortunately, we couldn't get you for the interview while it was still in there. But tell us about the opening and, you know, what types of work you had in Lebesnik.
Right. What was the body of work that was there?
Well, the body of work, the title was What If We Had That Too? And that work was really about a what if of underserved communities having the amount of resources and community that other communities do have, affluent communities, to where their professions are seen as like streamlined in a community. Some communities have a streamline of only a few professions that actually don't grant them any stability at all, the financial stability. So it was the idea of what if this community had what that community had, and what if those things were equal for them? What if they got to see people in those types of roles growing up, and that could change the community itself? I know in the community that I grew up in, there was a lot of ideas towards being an athlete, but not really towards STEM research, right? It's this idea of something so unattainable being the norm, where the things that are attainable and that should happen for that community to create a sustainable community together should be actually what is cherished, you know? So just like realizing my upbringing and like seeing what I've seen, like growing up and the friends I've met, the people I've met throughout my lifetime, just that's really where that body of work came from. And then also too, it was a challenge for myself. I know a lot of my work is, my past work has been wild, right? It's been profanity and things like that, just like very in your face, sort of shock value. And this is the first body of work that I didn't take that route.
I'm wondering, so your work is inspired by, of course, your experiences, but do you have a particular place or activity that allows you to fully realize what you have in your mind? So is it like taking a walk or is there a particular place that you like to create?
Well, it's all over the place for me because I love music. I'm a musician. I'm a drummer. I love to play all the instruments. I have so many. And for me, it's sometimes just a music lyric of certain music or a certain like melody can start a piece. Because I like to listen to music as I work. I like to listen to music doing anything, really. But with this body of work, it really just came about from making one piece that I made last year. And I was just thinking, this is interesting because this piece was about being a profession of a holistic healer, right? I know me growing up, that was definitely not a role or something I thought of or heard about from, you know, authority figures and things like that. So that one piece really led to that. So sometimes it's like pieces, they'll take me to a place or even if it's a place that I was trying to go. And now that's influencing my next step. So, I have another body work I'm making, too, and that stemmed from two pieces I made half a year ago. So it's just like those things where I go back to it. I'm like, okay, it's a story to be told, you know, and sometimes a walk or a bike ride, it does help. I clear my mind a lot, and I write a lot. So a lot of my ideas come from writings, not just drawings or sketches.
So is there a particular time of day that you're most inspired to work? I know with having a job, all of us have to balance our job and our artistic lives. So are you early morning, late night?
Oh, wow. I'm both. I'm both, mm-hmm. actually. I know with working after work, I go straight to the studio. So it's right after work. I just waste no time getting right in there because, like you said, time is of the essence. Like, how can you have this and balance everything else that you do? I just go straight into it. And on the weekends, I go early. I create early and create at night. It depends on how that day is. So,
one of the terms you use in your description is Afro-alien. So why don't you explain and expound on that in your, I know that was in your bio and in your artist statement. So, but explain that to our audience.
All right. So Afro-alien was coined, I want to say my sophomore or junior year of college, when I actually got a grasp on what I wanted to create, what type of universe and how my senior project could go at that time. Before that moment, I was a minimalist. I actually love color field paintings only. So I took this route to dive deeper into myself and my community and really the communities I've been in and like my upbringing. And that's what really brought about the idea of Afro-alien, because there was times where I wore a natural fro on campus and with the Afro pick up in my hair, and it would be stairs, right? And I'm like, okay, that's weird, you know, but that made me feel alienated. And I'm an Afro-American person. So for me, I was like Afro-alien. It just sort of stuck. And then from there, I got to like see each personality of my Afro-alien start to happen through each piece. And now it's this universe that's like, I'm not going to say it's out of control, but at some point, it's like characters are the backgrounds. Like that thing that character is floating on top of or running on top of is a character itself. And so it's this form that Afro-aliens are about the environments and the people and their thoughts. So it's really all about that community. So that's where Afro-alien is, and that's where it came from.
A very interesting term, and you know, and that how that almost informs your work. And like I said, I was reading through your artist statement, I thought it would be good for you to explain it to our audience. So,
And I immediately thought artist alien, just in general as well.
You know? No, that works.
Because I think all of us who like stayed in that art department were considered aliens.
Yeah, you're correct, and that speaks to that too. I mean, all of my characters, they're very emotive. They're very like comical in a way, but they're telling of truth. You know, facial expressions tell truth. Like it's all in your eyes and your you know your smile. Like how everything goes. And I mean, what you just said, Esther, I think that's like head on. And I'm an artist that loves interpretations. I may have, you know, something set or a symbol that is there, but I love interpretations of my audience and those that, you know, engage in my artwork. So thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. Well, we're going to switch to the other hat that you wear in the artist community. And you've been doing this, I think, approximately about a year for South Shore Arts, doing Replace Kelly in the department, taking care of grants and everything. We'll let you tell more about the thing, but as the administrative coordinator there at the South Shore Arts. So first of all, tell us how you came to the job and then, you know, what you're doing in it on a like day-to-day basis. And I know there's another thing you want to talk about because that's coming up is grants.
Ooh. Yes, Larry. So my other hat here.
The furrowed brow.
Right. So I actually joined South Shore Arts as an arts instructor first. And at that time, I had just quit Amazon, actually, to be quite transparent there. I was a manager there, and it wasn't working out for me. I just didn't feel like my calling. I had another passion for analytics and numbers, data, and calculating, but that passion wasn't enough for me, as art is. So I started working here, and then I was like, well, I haven't tried administration before. So I took a swing at it, and I've been here ever since. I've learned a lot in my time, and just to see yet another experience and another passion of mine be exposed through taking such an opportunity, right? It's helped me see a lot that I want to do for the art and for the arts community. So I didn't know I wanted to do that. I just knew I wanted to teach.
So it improves you as being an advocate for the arts because you're seeing as much as we like to think pie in the sky art, there is a businessy type of side to that, you know, to get it out there for individual artists, even trying to promote themselves and things like that. And, you know, a lot of times that's a place where artists maybe fail. It's like I'll paint it, I'll create it, and they will come. And that doesn't always, you have to also advocate for that. So, and that's an important thing. And you've been there, like I said, about a year and at a time of transition at the South Shore Arts where, we've had several people that leave in the position that you're filling. And then, of course, Dave Micah has come in there, replacing the longtime John Kane who ran that. So, interesting time. So, tell us what you do day-to-day as you're in your role there.
Ooh, well, day-to-day, first thing is first, I check my emails before I get here, actually. So I'm, like, prepared on my drive here, just thinking and planning, okay, what to send next, who's in the email list, and then to check on our events and our event registrations to make sure the numbers are matching, to make sure that social media, that Bridget is keeping everything on track there so that we can hit our numbers and our goals, and then also to keep in touch with all the arts communities around us and arts organizations that we all help, because I feel like we all help each other and we're all in this together to make sure that art is not forgotten and that it's cherished, you know. So, but every single day it's about that. And then and also looking for interviewees for Eye on the Arts, right, with John Kane. So it's every single day is different. And I think that's what I love too. But it's always like a routine where at the end of the day, I have this checklist and I have to make sure it's all checked off. You know, it helps me stay organized and it helps everyone else stay organized. That's the key with this administrative position. So
now you're coming up on one of the more important periods of one of the things that you do is the Indiana Arts Commission grants, the different grants. Why don't you tell us about the different grants that are available and somewhat of the process, and in case any of the artists in our audience that are unaware of it, what they can do, maybe still do at this point. But tell us about the different level of grants, how Region 1 works and all that.
So for Region 1, is South Shore Arts, the regional arts partner. Dave is taking over the partner role. I'm taking over the regional arts coordinator role for Region 1. And we are handling arts organization support, tier 1, 2, 3. And then we are doing APS, so arts project support. Now for me, I am still learning and I'm learning as I go. Just want to put that out there. This Thursday is the last day for draft review for new applicants of the AEOS, so Arts Organization Support. The deadline for both APS and AOS is March 9th, so 11:59 p.m. From there, that's really, I have so much information in my brain that I'm like, I can't get it out.
So a question would be like, so it's obvious when it's art organization, you're talking about a larger organization, but the arts project, do you have to be a non-for-profit or can you just be an individual artist who wants to work on a larger project?
Okay, now that's a great question. It has to be a 501(c)(3) non-for-profit. Or it could be a individual that is sponsored with the organization. That is the only way for the individual to be a part of that granting process. Because I actually did some research from before I really knew about everything. And then the individual grant was actually discontinued around 2021 or so. I felt disheartened to know that, but
I know it was very sad.
Yeah, but from this, it's still a way for them to still get grant support too. So
very good. So and just for by way of letting our audience know, we are part of the Arts Project Grant, actually for our originating station WVLP. So we're part of that process too, and everything. So briefly, tell us maybe the process. What people have to do. I mean, I know it's late in the process, but maybe they say, "Well, I have a great arts project with an organization, and I can do that." What could they do and still make the deadline of March 9th?
So everything they can do, they can go to ISC.gov, and then start with the portal, create your account, and it's still time to do it. I know there's 4 criteria that are very, very, very important about your arts project and about your art organization support, so please look into those first. And also for arts project, number one thing to do is to check to see if your organization is in GuideStar. If it is not in GuideStar, that could be a liable issue in the beginning before the process actually starts taking place after the deadline of the application. So I feel like that's crucial. And also the eligibility quiz, I feel like that's crucial to do before you even start your application and get to that point. And I know there's still some time left, so.
Right. And of course, this is airing the weekend of March 3rd and March 5th. Yeah. But there's still a little bit of time left if you want to do that and maybe learn the process. Are you still looking for people to evaluate the things? That's further down the road after the grants are in. They have a little area like a jury and things like that. So are you still looking for people to fill that function?
Yes, we are. Me and Dave are actively working on the process to vet our possible panelists and also our facilitators and our readers. And so we're still figuring everything out. We're getting all the information from last year and the year before to help us create a strong panel this year. So, and with us being fresh and brand new, we've had a lot to learn in this very short amount of time, but we are definitely getting it done. I know I have some reviews today, so I definitely will get those done. But when this airs, of course.
Sure.
It'll be before. It'll be after.
So how can people find your personal work online? Do you have a...
Oh, yes.
Can you give them information on that?
So my website, my official website is avonarts.space. And you just type it in. It'll pop right up. It's the only domain name out there. I'm very happy and grateful to have it. And then also from there, I have my Facebook account, which is Avon Arts 2. My Instagram is Avon Arts 2. And then Twitter is Avon Arts 2 as well. And then I have Pinterest, which is Avon Arts 2. So that's my brand.
So is that the number name. 2? Is that TWO?
Yeah. It's the number 2.
Okay.
Perfect. And then also I have some NFTs on OpenSea at Avon Arts too, as well. So yeah, I'm sort of covering every spot of the internet, trying to. But yeah, I'm trying to think if I have any more, but I'll have to say Avon Arts too on most social media platforms, and it will pop up. Oh, LinkedIn is my real name, so Avon Hammersmith.
Right. And what we'll do, too, is your picture on our website. We'll take a link to at least one of those places so they can start to find you and everything. So that will be good. So 1 minute left. You gave us that information about your personal stuff. How to maybe get in touch with you at South Shore Arts and maybe even ask some questions about Grant and also Regional Arts Council and things like that. You got about 1 minute left.
Okay. My email for South Shore Arts is Avin, A-V-I-N. At SouthShoreArtsOnline.org. And you can reach me at 219-836-1839. And my extension is 100. And you can call me for grant support, any questions, concerns. You can call me for classes here at South Shore Arts. You can call me for literally anything, and I can get you pointed to the right person here. So.
Excellent. Well, Avin, we really appreciate you coming on Art in the Air and sharing all the information about your personal art journey and also the art advocacy that you were doing there at South Shore Arts. That's Avin Hannah-Smith. He's at South Shore Arts and also an artist. Recently had an exhibit at Lebesnik Art Center. Avin, thank you so much for being on Art on the Air.
Thank you so much, Larry. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you, Esther. Thank you. Pleasure. Likewise.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org, and every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, also streaming live at LakeshorePublicRadio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Art in the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker, and for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art on the Air. We rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good, and you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.